why I'd like to welcome everyone, Brochem Aboim, and thank everyone for coming. Tonight's Kashrus topic will be Chol of Yisrael, loosely translated as Jewish milk. Now, before I begin, again, I usually try to refer back in some way, shape, or form to the years I had the schus to teach these topics in Beis Yaakov here in Los Angeles. Wonderful experience. And I found that this topic, more than any other topic, it's a short topic. We hopefully will finish it tonight, maybe even less than the allotted amount of time. But it's a very emotional topic for some people. Both sides of the issue. And therefore, I learned that I always have to preface this topic with a lot of times people thought or assumed what my position is and got very emotional about it. But I guarantee you, most people do not know what I do myself privately, which is a separate issue. And I'm trying to approach this topic in a non-emotional way, in a Torah way, and especially to clarify a very misunderstood area of halacha. So let's begin. So the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hey Amud Beis. Very seemingly clear Gemara, if there is such a thing. And the Gemara says, Chalav Shachalvo Nochri. If there was milk that a non-Jew milked the cow, the Ein Yisrael ra'ahu, and a Jew did not see this non-Jew milk do the milking process, so the Gemara says that milk is asur. That milk is prohibited. Now, if you recall last week, one of the ideas that is overarching in this week, the week before, Emirat Hashem, to a certain extent next week, and believe that we'll talk about wine and wine products, is that there we've been discussing a number of areas of halacha of kashrus dealing with non-Jews, and Chazal made various takanos in these various areas, and the reason why Chazal made certain things enacted or prohibited certain things was one of two reasons. Either to distance us from the non-Jews, because we're going to be in exile, and unfortunately for a very long period of time, we're going to be in close proximity to non-Jews, and then the danger is, of course, we could get too chummy with them. So therefore, as we all know, what makes the world go round, especially for Jews, is food. Food is very important to Jews. I still remember a few years ago, I should have said this story last week when I was talking about Bishul Akum, but I was talking to an influential Rav, and I heard about a certain shul in Flatbush that had become very popular. So I was speaking to this Rav, and I said, why is this shul so popular? The Rav, a great speaker? He said, oh, he's okay. So I said, well, what's the secret to this place's popularity? He looked me straight in the eyes, and he said, cholent. I said, what? And he said, the shul has the best cholent in Flatbush. There's no question about it. So food, as we all know, is very important to us. Very important. So as we learned last week and the week before, so Chazal made certain takanos because food is such a powerful thing, either to distance us from the non-Jews or because we're going to have non-Jews in close proximity, and they might be making our food or processing our food. The second problem is they're not as zealous or careful or whatever word you want to use about halachas as we are. They might be very sincere, but, you know, it's not the same thing. So therefore, they might mess something up as far as kashrus is concerned. And I mentioned last week or 2 weeks ago that as we go through these halachas, in certain things there's more an emphasis on one reason, intermarriage, or there might be an area of these takanos of Chazal where there's more of an emphasis in the other area. Tonight, when we're talking about milk, the emphasis was really on kashrus, not so much intermarriage. And the reason why we have to have a Jew involved, well, we'll see, supervising the milking process is that Chazal were scared that maybe something was added to the milk that's not kosher. Maybe the milk's not kosher. Maybe something was added to the milk that's not kosher. We can understand that very clearly today because there's tons of additives to even regular milk. Vitamin A, vitamin D. There's all these things. Now, obviously, we know those things are kosher, but how do you know? Now, just to illustrate this, I received this little news blurb a couple years ago from Aaron Gross. And this headline from mosquenews.com, which I assume is moskonews.com. Mrs. Kronbach could probably explain it to me better. But it says as follows. Scientists at the Vornoz State, it's not Volozhin, but Vornoz State Technological Academy, so in Russia, have developed a method for processing blood and turning it into food products such as milk, yogurt, chocolate, coffee. Now, to the best of my knowledge, that's not here in America, and I don't even know if it was implemented in Russia, but it just gives you the idea that, as we all know, one of the things I keep on mentioning is it's really harder to keep kosher today than it was even a couple years ago. As I mentioned last week, more things are becoming kosher. As I mentioned also last week, it was all over the news last week or the week before, that kosher, the label kosher, is a more popular label and is a more demand than organic and natural. It was just in the news just last week or the week before. Like close to 3,000 new products became kosher last year. Companies realize it's a very important distinction if you could say you're kosher. It's amazing. But with that, as we all know, is the danger that we constantly, and this I keep on mentioning this every week, you really have to be on some kosher email list or information list because there's every week an unauthorized this, an unauthorized that, an unauthorized this, somebody's switching, they're changing, and something you thought was kosher before is not kosher, something you thought is pig before is not kosher. It's baffling. It's really baffling. So by milk, the issue is that we're scared that maybe something non-kosher was mixed into that milk. And therefore, the halacha is that it has to be supervised. A Jew has to supervise it. And that's what Chol Yisrael is. Chol Yisrael is not that a Jew milked the cow. Not necessarily. Could be he did. But a Jew has to watch over the milking process. Now, even though a non-Jew did the actual milking, if a Jew supervised what we call was mashgiach over the milking process, the milk is okay. It's called chol v'sel. Now, again, there's halachas about this. He has to check the barrels or the containers before. Today we know that's really important. A few years ago there was such an issue with containers that they were smeared with a sealant that was pig. So, again, we don't realize, but obviously, and we'll tell a couple stories at the end, Chazal obviously knew what they were talking about. And therefore, a Jew has to watch over the kashrus process. I didn't put up the whiteboard today because there isn't too much I have to write on the board. But the one thing I would write on the board is the halacha of the extent to which the Jew has to supervise is an important concept. We're talking about kosher concepts. And I think we brought it up a little while ago. And that is the Jew doesn't have to stand there constantly and watch the entire milking process. What he has to do is he has to be a yotze v'nichnas, as we call it. Yotze v'nichnas. And that's a very important concept, not only for here, but everywhere. Yotze v'nichnas means go out. Yotze v'nichnas means he comes in. I think we discussed this a little while ago, that this is most of the way we run hashgachas. The way they do supervision is, a Jew's not there all the time. a Jew is, comes in and out at in irregular intervals. The concept is that nobody's going to pull any shtick because, the, as they say in the biz, the beard could walk in at any time. And therefore, there's a fear. If I pull something, I could get caught. That's as opposed to a mashgiach tamidi. Mashgiach tamidi means somebody is there constantly. Again, when we talk about wine, hopefully next week, we'll do wine a little bit next week and maybe get into tefilas kelim maybe next week. We'll see how far we get with wine. But again, that's what you have to have by milk. A Jew coming in and out and in and out and making sure that nothing happened. As I said before, the Jew has to check the vessels before and so on and so forth. If the Jew missed the entire milking process, the entire milk came late, got stuck on the freeway, whatever the case may be, even though there's basically absolutely no probability that there be something unkosher added. For example, like in the old days, what they were worried about is non-kosher milk, like from some non-kosher animal, like a pig or something like that. So even though there's no pig anywhere around here, it's all cows. None, right, like we have today. All cows. So what's the likelihood there's anything in there that's not milk? Even though that's true, if a Jew wasn't there supervising, the halacha is that the milk is not kosher. That's the halacha. It's pretty clear. And that's really the end of the ballgame. It'd be a 10 minute, 11 minute shiur. So that's really it. And that's the way it always was for generations, that people used to, again, go out to farms, and they used to supervise, or someone would supervise the milking process, and that was called Chol Yisrael, and that is called Chol Yisrael. So then, what's the big deal today? What changed? So the answer is, as we all know, America is a very unique country in many, many shapes and forms. But especially as far as Jews are concerned, it's a very unique country, for good and for bad. For good and for bad. For the good is the freedoms, and as Rav Moshe writes, it's a malchus shel chesed, Torah b'li ayin hara flourishes, you know, people could do, observe Torah openly, we don't appreciate it. I think I spoke about that last week. But America is unique in other facets also, and this is where we have the very misunderstood, and I do have to say it very clearly, very misunderstood response of by Rav Moshe Feinstein. That's really the key tonight. One of the unique things about America is we have government agencies. Every government today has government agencies. How efficient they are, how corrupt they are, so on and so forth, who knows. But at least in America, I'm not saying everything's not corrupt, but especially with food, with drugs, with things like that, we have an agency called the FDA, the Federal Drug Administration, Food and Drug Administration, and there's laws for everything. Literally, for anything that goes into your mouth, there's a law. Rabbi Blumenkranz, those who remember him, when he spoke in the shul a couple of times, Zechut Tzadik Livracha, spoke to people. I remember people didn't like hearing this, but he spoke about laws about how many rat hairs there is allowed in rice and other things. People didn't want to hear that. But there's laws about how many aphids and bugs could be in leafy vegetables, which we all know is a definite halakha problem for us. There's also laws about milk. There's laws about anything you eat. But there's laws about milk. What could be added, what cannot be added. And there's very tight rules about that. And therefore, and there's strict fines about this. And the government takes it very seriously. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva. And again, this is a very misunderstood tshuva by sometimes very big Talmid Chachamim also. Not to say I'm a Talmid Chachamim, but I did a little research on this. And Rav Moshe says as follows. Rav Moshe says that all milk in America, you could drink. Any milk. you could drink. Now, everybody thinks that what Rav Moshe said was, there's a few misunderstandings about this tshuva, Rav Moshe. Everybody thinks that what Rav Moshe said is he uprooted the halacha of Chol Yisrael. Rav Moshe was a malach, an incredible person, but as great as Rav Moshe was, he could not undo something that's written in the Gemara. You know, no matter how great it, we know that's one of the rules we have in halacha, that to undo something that was enacted by a previous, based in a previous generation, you can't undo it unless the people who are undoing it are bigger in number and in wisdom, both. Now, facts be as it is, no matter how great we are, it's generally accepted that one generation is weaker than the next generation, and therefore you will not see, until Mashiach comes, somebody undoing something. If they do, so then we look askance at it, as we talked about the reform movement, not to compare. But so how is it possible that Rav Moshe could give such a psak? So the answer is chas v'shalom. Rav Moshe was not undoing the halacha of Chol Yisrael. The halacha is, and Rav Moshe, so to speak, agrees with it, if you want to call it. Moshe can't disagree with the halacha that the Gemara says that a Jew has to supervise the milk. So what's going on with Rav Moshe? Answer is as follows. Rav Moshe did, to use a, I shouldn't use this term, but he did an end around, a backdoor. In other words, Rav Moshe said like this. Rav Moshe said that since there's a government agency and it's a multi-billion dollar government agency, and there are strict rules and enforcement of these laws, so therefore milk in America is supervised. It's not willy-nilly unsupervised milk. All milk is considered like Chol Yisrael because they're scared maybe more of the government than they are of a beard. You know, unfortunately, some people think they could outsmart a beard, but they can't. They're scared of the government. So therefore, all milk is considered Chol Yisrael. Now, again, in the vernacular, Rav Moshe doesn't say this, in the vernacular today, we have three different levels. We have Chol Yisrael, and then what we call is Chol of Stam, regular milk. But I just want to make it very clear, Rav Moshe was not undoing the halacha of Chol Yisrael. He can't do that. Rather, he was saying that since all the milk is supervised, now you'll say, but you know, there's not a guy from the FDA at, I don't know, at Ador Farms or whatever, Jersey Made or whatever. But the answer is, yeah, but there's government enforcement. So therefore, there's a fear. And therefore, and there's laws about what they can add and what they cannot add. And they can't just add pig milk or something like that to milk. So therefore, all milk is considered like Chol Yisrael. Now, what confuses people is that at the end of the tshuva, Rav Moshe writes that it's best to drink classic Chol Yisrael if you can anyways. So a lot of people think that what Rav Moshe was doing is like a backhanded, you know, you could drink regular milk, but it's really not the best thing. You should drink regular Chol Yisrael. That's the way most people read that tshuva of a Rav Moshe. But as I tell people very often, tshuvas of Rav Moshe, you really have to do a lot of research on. And the best thing to do, it's very hard to do, but the best thing is to ask someone who is real, there aren't so many people who are real, Talmidim of Rav Moshe finds in Zayek HaTzalak L'Racha, and ask them exactly what did Rav Moshe mean, what did Rav Moshe hold. And I have done this to a number of Talmidim of Rav Moshe. And one of the closest Talmidim of Rav Moshe told me in this language, he said, it's not a leniency. Regular milk is not a leniency. Rather, it's not kula. Rather, and he used this language, Rav Moshe held it was heter gomor. It's completely okay. Completely okay. So why does Rav Moshe say it's best to drink regular classic, not classic Coke, but classic Chol Yisrael? The answer is because, you know, it's always nice. It's always better to do that. You can understand that it's better to drink Chol Yisrael. Everyone can understand it. But people misunderstand. Rav Moshe was not giving a backhanded leniency and then saying, well, yeah, you could do it, but it's best to drink the other milk. Rav Moshe wasn't saying it. Rav Moshe held that regular milk is completely mutter, completely okay. Just as better, if you can, you know, to drink Chol V'Yisrael, the classic Chol V'Yisrael. Now, it happens to be that if you want to say that, okay, that's Rav Moshe, it happens to be one of the closest Talmidim of Rav Scheinberg's Zayin Gezeun, told me that Rav Scheinberg holds the same way. That regular, what we call regular milk in America is completely okay. Completely okay. Completely mutter is what he said. From one of the really extremely close Talmidim of Rav Scheinberg Zayin Gezeun told me this. So again, the idea is that neither Rav Moshe or Rav Scheinberg Zayin Gezeun were uprooting the halacha of Chol V'Yisrael. Can't say that. Rather, they're saying because of the situation in America, all milk is considered like Chol V'Yisrael. It's considered Chol V'Yisrael. Therefore, you could drink regular milk. Now, you have to realize this is extremely important because a lot of hashgachas, especially candy bars or what ice cream or whatever it is, rely upon this. Because obviously, OUD, I mean, okay, we know now OUD does not necessarily mean that's milchik, necessarily. But a lot of things are really milchik. They have whey in them, or they can have non-fat milk solids in them. If you read the labels, a lot of things have this. Now, how can they do this? Not Chol V'Yisrael. Answer is that they rely upon this tshuva of Rav Moshe, whole like Rav Scheinberg, or whatever you want to say. Now, also some say the Chazon Ish held this way also. Now, another clarification is, again, using the concept, you have to realize this tshuva only applies really in a country like America. If you unfortunately have to go to Borneo or New Guinea or something like that, unfortunately, it doesn't work, right? I don't know how much of a government standard they have there. I don't want to get into any racial comments, but I don't know. You have to ask someone bigger than myself. But I would dare say maybe even in a country like Mexico, where we know, unfortunately, there's a lot of corruption and things like that. So there might be a government standard, but I don't know. But again, it's really unique to, as we call it, like a Western country. America is obviously the primary example where you can use this tshuva of Rav Moshe. If you go somewhere else, you really have a problem of that, according to everyone, you have to have classic Chol V'Yisrael, milk supervised by a Jew. Okay, everybody understand that? It's relatively clear? Again, it's very misunderstood, and this is one of the most misunderstood tshuvas of Rav Moshe. There's a lot of them, but this is one of the classic ones that is really way misunderstood.
So if you had from New Guinea a candy bar that had an OUD on it,
right,
would you have to assume that they were using...
They were on top of it.
And they were using Chol V'Yisrael?
Somehow. Either Chol V'Yisrael or New Guinea has a better government than I think.
Okay.
Right. They have to do something. I mean, I think we got a few years ago, I forgot where I bought it, but I think in Costco, believe it or not, I got, it's a few years ago, Kahlua chocolates. And it had a hashgacha from Mexico. Mm-hmm. And I checked it out, and it was a reliable hashgacha from Mexico. And I think I was told it was Chol V'Yisrael. I don't know how they made it, but that wasn't my problem. But, okay. So with that said, there's a couple other things also. A few other things. There is also another issue. And the other issue is powdered milk. Now, powdered milk in the kashrus biz is also extremely used all over the place. I'll give you an example. Krispy Kreme donuts. Krispy Kreme donuts, basically, as far as I understand, the way they're made is whatever Krispy Kreme store you go to, let's say in Burbank, you go to a Krispy Kreme store and it's under hashgacha, assuming, but that store in Burbank gets a mix. This is part of the franchise laws agreement. They get a mix from the Krispy Kreme company out there. I think it's in New Jersey or somewhere. And then they bring it to the plant with Krispy Kreme machinery and Krispy Kreme hats and Krispy Kreme this and Krispy Kreme everything, and they process it and they make it into donuts. What do they get? They get a mix. Now, of course, they have their own oil and all this type of stuff. They have to use certain oil, but the mix is milk. And again, what I've been told is the mix has powdered milk in it, obviously. So there's a separate issue about powdered milk. Now, again, simply the idea would be if you had powdered milk, that would have to be chol yisrael, meaning that what's powdered milk? Powdered milk basically is milk, and you know most of milk is water. So what they do, they take out the water, they evaporate the water, and they just have a milk powder. They dry it, make a milk powder, then you add milk, and then you have a reconstituted milk. So the simple idea is that milk that they had originally, that they sucked out the water, and now you're reconstituting by adding milk, that original milk had to be chol of Yisrael, had to be supervised by a Jew. So now the other question is that true? So most poskim say yes. The Rav of Yerushalayim, Rosvi Pesach Frank, Zecher Tzadik L'Racha, said no, it could be regular milk. Now again, you have to assume, you have to have some government supervision over it, but and know that there's no pig in it. But it doesn't have to be, the original source does not have to be chol yisrael. Why not? So Rav Frank has an interesting line of reasoning. He says because there was never any takana over powdered milk. There's no such thing. It was only over regular milk. And you have to realize for us that's huge because, again, you have to understand that for modern day kashrus, a lot of stuff has powdered milk in it. A lot of stuff is OUD or whatever D because there's a powdered milk somewhere in there. So now you can understand that there's different levels, everybody within the realm of halacha, but there's different levels of what people hold as far as chol yisrael is concerned. Now again, based upon what we're saying tonight, everybody who's a shomer Torah mitzvahs keeps chol yisrael. You cannot not do that because it's a clear halacha. There's no question about it. The question is, how do you keep that? Do you keep it based upon the FDA? Do you keep it based upon powdered milk? Do you keep it the classical way? Believe it or not, there's some people have various forms of this. For example, some people would drink, not many, but there's some people who only drink classic chol yisrael milk. But maybe a Krispy Kreme donut they would eat. Maybe that would they would do. Different people do different things. So now, obviously, the most common thing is people who keep by the chew by Rav Moshe, you know, eat as long as it has good hashgacha, right? So they'll eat a Hershey's candy bar, they'll have Baskin Robbins or Carvel ice cream, they'll have a Krispy Kreme donut. I'm not saying as far as calories and health is concerned in your arteries and your heart, but I'm just saying, I'm not saying you should eat this all the time. But even though I might, well, let's leave that. Things like that. That's and there's other people who obviously would not do that at all. They would only have chol yisrael milk. They would only have Klein's ice cream or whatever chol yisrael ice cream you want. Recently, Klein's ice cream I saw, one that my wife bought, had a special run under a special hashgacha, a certain chassidish hashgacha. So those group of chassim normally, I assume, would not eat Klein's, but now it has a special run of their hashgacha. So, you know, it goes, as I mentioned before, I think I did, when we were talking about six-hour cheese, there's two companies. Well, people think it's two companies. It's, from what I understand, really one company. There's Miller cheese and Ha'olam cheese. You see, it's really the same company. The only difference is Ha'olam is the cheeses that they make their source, the base, was Chol Yisrael milk. Miller cheese, same as everything, but the milk that they use to make the cheese is regular milk, called Stam, as we call it. That's the difference. So it's the only difference between, as far as I know, between it's the same company, same owner, same everything. That's what I heard years ago. I assume it's the same thing. So again, it's the exact same thing. Now, before I take questions, I want to tell you a quick story about this idea of a government oversight over this. So years ago when I was in Kol, Debbie was very Moser Nefesh, and she worked in order to support us, even though, you know, everybody knows the extremely high wages guys get when they're in Kol. She told me an interesting story. She worked as a dental assistant, and one day a man walked in. It was an office in Manhattan. A man walked in and took off his jacket to sit down in the chair, and he had a gun, a holster with a gun. And, you know, maybe in Los Angeles that wouldn't be, but maybe in New York it's not so surprising. But she put on the bib on him, and she made a beeline to the dentist. And she said, "There's a guy with a gun." So he said, "Yeah, he works for the government." I don't know if that made her feel any better. But it turns out he worked for the FDA. So my wife, being the smart cookie that she is, right away saw the opportunity. So she questioned him about Chol Yisrael, I mean, without mention. But she said to him, because he's involved with enforcement, and sometimes, you know, in certain areas when there's money to be made, sometimes you can have some not nice people involved. So she asked him, "Did you ever hear of people adulterating milk?" So he said, "I never heard of it. Never heard of such a thing." So he said, "Well, but what do you mean? Like, what would they do?" Well, so she said, "Well, maybe they add certain things that they're not allowed to milk." So he said, "Well, like what? Like soy?" Right? We know soy is not a problem, right? But in other words, he meant like to stretch the milk. So she said, "No, not like that." But she explained, you know, like kosher. Would anybody add like pig's milk or something not kosher to milk? He said, "Impossible." He said, it's economically crazy. He said, "It's crazy." And besides, he said, and we would close them down. So again, this is the idea. In other words, they do enforce these type of things. So people on the non-Chol Yisrael camp will say, "Yeah, well, how do they really enforce it? They really know if this dairy cheated." Again, but there is such an idea in halacha, and we saw that. Right, so that's a separate issue, bishlakum, or so it gets involved with what we talked about last week, whether it's ola shulchan malachim. So I was going to use that example last week, but we had a lot of other examples. I think if you remember from last week, so one of the hard parts about whether something is a violation of bishlakum or not is, one is, could it be eaten raw or could it not be eaten raw? Second step is, even if it cannot be eaten raw, if it's ola shulchan malachim, if it's something that is worthy to go up to a king's table, so then it's a problem. If it's not worthy to go up to a king's table, so then it's not a problem. And I mentioned, this is very nebulous, what could be eaten raw, what could not be eaten raw. I think we talked about carrots as an example. Ola shulchan malachim, I think the example I gave is, what's the difference between potato chips and roasted potatoes? I think I mentioned last week, that's why you see sometimes, you know, a regular hashgacha on like Lay's potato chips, because they say it's an easier hashgacha, because you don't have to have somebody there all the time turning on the oven. Because you know, George W. or whoever's going to be president after this tonight's primary, who knows? It's all in the hands of Hashem. So, but. There's other Hamish potato chips. They say, what's the difference between a roasted potato and a potato chip? And therefore, the Hamish, as they call it, hashkachas, they have somebody every morning, supposedly there, pushing the button and starting the ovens. That's the difference between those two. The same thing would apply by a Krispy Kreme donut. Most people, and you would think that this is kind of obvious, right? That a donut is not olo shulchan lachem. Again, we're not talking about what George W. eats on the side. Maybe he has in the drawer in the Oval Office, who knows what. But we're talking about, again, Queen Elizabeth comes, they have a state dinner, so what's on the menu? I don't think there's donuts. Now, see, the problem with that is, again, this is all very nebulous, because how about an eclair? Now, probably an eclair would be a problem. So, man nishtana, an eclair from a donut. One has a hole and one doesn't. That's a difference. But is that a difference? Right, that's what they used to say in the yeshiva world. One train has red wheels and one train has black wheels. It's a difference, but does that make a difference? They're both trains, right? And so it's a difference. You can always find a difference. So you're right. This is, as I mentioned, one of the goals of Sight's teaching the concepts is another Sight goal of the series of Shirim we're having is to teach people that it's a lot more to Hashgacha than just ingredients. Somebody has to give a psak somewhere. Is this an important food or is it not? Just going back to last week.
Also, you're right that I recently came back from a trip to Costa Rica.
Yeah.
And there's only one type of brand of milk you can buy. You can't, because they know, so I think the rabbi doesn't make a check on the plant, but you can't buy every one brand
right. Right. I think Costa Rica's maybe a little, it's supposed to be more, I don't know, American.
Yeah,
but yeah, but it might, I don't know, I don't want to say anything against COVID, but it's still probably like a banana republic, not the store. But, so you have to clarify that, nobody knows what the original context is. But, yeah, no, it's a problem. I mean, people think, oh, you can buy, that's another misconception of what most of you, oh yeah, you can buy any milk. No, you can't. I mean, in America, yeah. But I don't know. Like I said, you go to Borneo, you can't do it.
Coca-Cola,
that
is different. It's, they use the Pesach recipe.
Really?
That's cheaper from the
corn. I mean, because there's sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Costco, they sell Mexican Coca-Cola that has sugar in it, in bottles.
In England, the milk was okay until they joined the EEC.
Right.
And then in France, there could be pink milk.
Right.
And so
it could be who
and
knows.
That's when they stopped in England. Just to use regular,
right.
And they start having
going back to regular
the kedashia and the kosher.
Right.
The kosher.
That's right. So you really have to know if you travel outside of America, you really have to know what's going on. Okay, I want to end tonight. Like I said, it's going to be a little shorter than other. I want to end with two very important stories. Stories, but halacha, that are very important for us to bear in mind when we talk about any halacha. Now again, the idea here is that we have a gzera derabbanim. We have a gzera derabbanim. And the Aruch HaShulchan, not the Shulchan Aruch, but the Aruch HaShulchan, lived in the end of the last century. Again, we have Baruch Hashem Svarim here, one of the pillars of modern day halacha, says a very interesting story. We know that the Aruch HaShulchan was the Rav of Navardik, but I don't know, he doesn't say if he was in Navardik when this happened. But he tells a very interesting story. He said he had some balbatim in the city that he was at that every year they would go on a trip, a business trip. They go to Vilna to a certain place to do some business, and they used to look forward to this leg of the trip because there was a non-Jewish man who they'd buy cream from. They add this cream to their coffee, and as they would say, it was me'ain olam haba. He doesn't say that, but you know, they would absolutely relish about this about the cream added to the coffee. And they used to look forward every year to this stop because they would go to this guy and they get the cream. And again, their assumption was, again, it wasn't modern-day America, that, you know, what's wrong with cream? What could possibly be wrong with cream? So the Aruch HaShulchan says that one time, one of them went up to the non-Jew, the dairy person, and pleaded with him. Tell me, you know, we travel, and we go all sorts of places, and we go far and wide, and we've never found cream like yours. Tell us the secret. So the man said a very interesting thing. He said, I'll tell you the truth. You know what I do? take cream, and then I take cow brains, and I pulverize the cow brains, and I add it, mix it in to the cream. And the Aruch HaShulchan says these guys were absolutely devastated, because for all these years they've been violating Isurei Doraisa without even realizing it. Everything. Like, also, why? Because they thought they were smarter than Chazal. They thought they were smarter than Chazal. Chazal have an insight and understand what again, we have to understand what level, which we can't understand, Chazal were on. They just didn't, you know, we think, or some people think, not we, think that they legislated like Congress and the House of Representatives and the Senate. You know, it was with Ruach HaKodesh and depth and profundity that Chazal made a takana d'rabbanan. And even though there might be a takana and there might be one reason that Chazal revealed to us, there are many, 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 many reasons which they didn't reveal to us, which go into a takana. That's one thing. The other idea is brought down by the Ramah, believe it or not, about in the halachas of Chol Yisrael, at the end of the halachas of Chol Yisrael. Fascinating idea. We all know one of the, you know, what you want to call it, tragic figures in Jewish history is a man named Acher, also known as Rav Elisha ben Abuya. Rav Elisha ben Abuya, one of the greatest, maybe the greatest, person in the time of the Mishnah, well, Rav Yehuda Nasi, besides Rav Yehuda Nasi, was Rav Meir. The time of the Mishnah, Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda Nasi, Rav Meir was one of the greatest people ever in the time of the Mishnah. Rav Meir had a Rebbe. His name was Rav Elisha ben Abuya. And Rav Elisha ben Abuya, the Gemara says, we call him Acher, someone else, because at a later stage in his life, he gave up from Kai altogether. He, as we say today, he went off the derech. And again, we don't appreciate what this means. Could you imagine? I mean, Baruch Hashem, it doesn't happen. Okay, imagine all of a sudden, one day, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, gets up, takes his yarmulke and throws out his head, forget it. It shaves off his beard, takes a plane to Las Vegas, you know, like Rav Eliashuv or Rav Avadya Yosef. Can you imagine what effect that would have on Klal Yisrael? It would be devastating to people. Really devastating. It actually happened. It actually happened. This great person, I mean, Rav Meir's Rebbe, you know, this is not chopped liver here. The Gemara says he went off the derech.
Is there a reason for it?
So the Gemara says a reason. Like, obviously the question is like, what happened? What happened to this guy? So the Gemara gives a very interesting diagnosis. The Gemara says because when he would give a shir, when he would stand up from the shir, the secular books would fly out from his lap. I don't think that means literally, but obviously the Gemara is saying he was into secular philosophy and secular stuff, and ultimately it pulled him away. Now this is very important for all of us to realize, because some of us, especially in our seductive society, you know, a little this, a little that, we have to realize we're not greater than Rav Elisha ben Abuya. Now, that's a famous Gemara. There's only one question on it. Where did that come from? In other words, where did he get, you know, like he was a big tomahawk and was walking down the street and, you know, like, where did that happen? So the Chazal say that really started at his bris. That at his bris, Rav Elisha ben Abuya's father, and there were great Talmid Chachamim at his bris, and Rav Elisha ben Abuya's father, now this is a very high level to perceive this, the Chofetz Chaim says, but Rav Elisha ben Abuya's father saw at little Elisha's bris that the Chachamim were talking and there was a fire around them. There was a fire. Now, I don't want to get into that right now. It's a whole separate discussion. But he wanted his son to be able to do the same thing. Mean trick. So he wanted his son to be a Talmid Chacham for that reason. And Chazal say, that's not the reason you want your son to be a Talmid Chacham. You want him to be a Talmid Chacham because Torah is the most important thing, not because, you know, you could pull a rabbit out of a hat. Right? You could do spooky things. You know, like we know Talmid Chacham could do incredible things. That's not the reason to want your son to be a Talmid Chacham. Now, I dare say there's one problem on that Gemara. So that was Mr., the father of Rav Elisha ben Abuya. Well, we know sometimes the father's a little off, but the mother saves the day. So I feel, I could be wrong, that the question on that Gemara is, okay, so the father was maybe Shlo Lishma, but how about his mother? His mother might have been Tzadekis. And therefore, again, why did he go off? Why was he into secular stuff? So the Ramah says at the end of the halachas of Chol of Yisrael, he says that because his mother was not careful when he was young and allowed him to be nursed by a non-Jewish woman. Speaking about Chol Yisrael, not Chol Yisrael. So again, that's a very interesting idea, and it really gets back to the very first shiur that we had when we were discussing about milchiks and fleishiks and the whole idea of kashrus. The reason why Rishonim say we have to be careful about what we eat is because what we eat becomes part of us, literally becomes part of us. As we all know, it's broken down, and Dr. Cohn could tell you more about this and other people better than I, that it literally becomes part of your being. And it has a devastating effect, not only physically, but also parallels that to your neshama too. You eat things that are high in cholesterol, your heart will plug up, God forbid. If you eat things that are not kosher, your neshama gets plugged up. And these are the devastating effects of this type of behavior. So therefore, we have to be very careful about what we eat and what we drink and what we consume, because it has an effect on us. Same way, we all know, like I just said, that physical things have a very strong effect on us. So too, it has what, if we're not careful about kashrus and all of its nuances, our neshama gets ill. Our neshama gets ill. So we have to be, so we see now the full picture of what happened, this tragic figure in Jewish history, this person, Rav Elisha ben Abuya, who just went off the deep end. Because he had the wrong attitude. Well, where did that come from? It came from the mother and the father. And part of that equation is what they allowed him to eat at a very early age. Very early age. And therefore, again, we have to be careful about everything we eat, drink, and ingest. Okay, any questions? Anything misunderstood or not understood? Okay, so that's it for tonight. Emirat Hashem, next week, we're going to talk about wine, grape juice, very important area of halacha. And that will be we'll see how long that takes. And maybe next week we'll also start into the next topic, which is Tvilas Kalim. Very popular topic here on Ein Shabbos for the obvious reason. But Emirat Hashem, we'll start that and bring that next week. Okay, Yashar Koach, everyone. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.